Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Wednesday. It's March 4th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And I see our guest, our number one guest today, Anthony Maranti, is already on the line. Good morning, Mr. Maranti. How are you, sir?
Good morning, my friend. How you been?
Thank God. Okay. I'm so excited to speak to you today because, well, first of all, you're a member of the Yonkers City Council, in case people don't know, which would be really unbelievable. But more importantly than that, you're also the budget chair. You won that distinction back in January, and it has unbelievable, it demands so much integrity and understanding. But you have a capacity as CPA for, I don't know, over 30 years, don't you?
That is correct.
So, I think it is such a complex issue because the only way one can understand how budgets are going and how a big city like Yonkers is functioning from a financial perspective, it's not the same as your home budget. It's so much larger, and you need a lot of input. How difficult is it to get all that input so that you can come up with an understanding of what the numbers are saying?
Well,
you're one
again,
man, you know, and the city's working on this for all year.
Well, you know, the thank God the city itself is doing well.
Yes.
all the development is paying off. Our problem in the city is we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem, and we need to just somehow reel that in and control it a little bit better. So I've done analysis. It's all about getting our money back from the state, because you know it all goes, all the money, sales tax, income tax, gets flowed up through there, and I've done a calculation that pretty much on average, we've sent at least $50 million more up than we got back each year. And we can use a little bit of that. Yeah, it is. It's amazing. You could discount it a little bit because of the fact that I didn't take into consideration the non-resident taxes a little bit lower. So even if you want to take that number and discount it, 5% conservatively, it's still $45 million. And we need that money, especially on the city side. You know, it's all about getting our money back. We're doing it. We're people are coming to Yonkers. They're buying. They're hanging out here, spending money. Sales tax is up. The income tax is kicking into place. So I'm very happy from that perspective. It's just that, we're fighting Albany to get our money so that we can get things done. And that's something you've been hearing. And I'm going to continue that dialogue until my last days on the council, which I hope will be in another 10 years.
Well, I think a lot of people are hoping for that with you. So that's not even in contention. I guess the thing that's very difficult is, like, I used to try to figure out how much money is coming in, where the revenue is. But the problem is that in Westchester County, the county itself does not separate one community from another. And even though we're the largest city in the county and the fourth largest, possibly even the third largest city in the state, they don't separate us from those numbers. So it's impossible to figure out where and what the revenue is and or where it's coming from. And unfortunately, the city doesn't break down some of the numbers, which is, I think, is deleterious to the administration, because somehow or another, if we don't know that we're doing well with economic development and the numbers not there to be seen, people question. Not because they're so smart, but because they just don't know.
It is difficult. I have because of my whether or not, I mean, because a lot of people can understand that.
You understand.
I do a little bit, maybe a little bit more than the average person because of occupational hazard.
Sure.
But the point of the matter here is the budget book does provide a lot of information. You just got to know how to do certain things. Like I said, the calculation that I told you is not in the budget book.
Right.
It's something that just all I can get from the city is I know what numbers, what the city provides us as to the numbers that the state has given us for sales tax and income tax. that total number they give me, I then can extrapolate it up to say how much more, you know, we're generating in state income tax. And it's not a secret. I could always, you know, provide this to folks. It's just
no,
you know,
I understand.
Excel is a wonderful tool. You know, once you plug numbers in, all you got to do is put two numbers in, and it calculates, you know, the rest of the calculation for me, and it's very simple.
Yeah.
But again, that's the easy part. The hard part is getting the money. I mean, you know, I was at there was a forum by the senators at the Riverfront Library a couple of weeks ago. You know, I keep pleading my case. You know, I pleaded my case to Senator Stuart Cousins, to Senator Mayer, Senator Biagi was there that morning, and you know, I'm not asking for anything but our own money back, and especially in the on the municipality side. You know, we've received the same $108 million for 10 years. I mean, you know, the union guys are you know, always looking to you know, for respect. You know, again, with all due respect, they're entitled to the pay increases,
yeah.
but it's all falling back on the city, and against my better judgment, I agreed, based on facts that were provided to me over my first 2 years, to increase taxes. As a Republican, it was very hard, but I felt that it was okay to do it because I didn't want to lose the momentum that we had. And the thing that I can tell people is the increases are paying off also, because infrastructure, you know, we're fixing a lot of roads, a lot of, you know, nobody's had interruption in water, you know, the pipes we're fixing with, and if anything breaks, we fix them immediately. We have the manpower to fix things immediately. You know, you don't know what you're missing until you don't have it. You know what I mean? So we're very good. We have a very good team of people here in Yonkers. In spite of, you know, every, you know, listen, you're never going to make 100% of the people happy or 100% of the time, but
I
think that
the
commissioners are doing a great job. You know, the mayor's crew is a good crew. You know, from planning people, you know, down to, you know, all the DPW guys, and we're doing it. I mean, we're getting it done. But unfortunately, you know, again, we raised the taxes. But I can say this.
But we're not getting it back.
Well, we are getting it back in a different way. And I'll tell you how, Heather, is that, I mean, people are still coming here. You know, the MGM is here, okay? Lionsgate is coming here. These things are going to continue to pay off. But what people don't, and the other thing that I can say about us using that money for infrastructure, the way we work like a well-oiled machine, it pays off. I mean, how many people you know in Yonkers have sold their house and have come back and said to you, it was a bidding war. You know, I put my house on the market for $450. I sold it for $480. You know, because people want to buy here. Excuse me?
Right. No, I didn't hear that, but that's not because of anything particular. It's just an individual thing. I'm sure someone who wants to sell a house and they got a better price than they were looking for, they would share that with their friends, and not necessarily with me. I don't know someone who's selling a house.
Well, there's
really
again.
I mean, I hear the talk, but it doesn't mean that people are selling.
Well, they are selling because the good and bad of it is our transfer taxes.
I mean, maybe new people are moving in, but I don't believe there's like a run to get out of the city. That's what I meant. Maybe I didn't explain that right. You know, so I'm glad
that
people.
But property values are up. I'm saying property values are up,
yeah.
And you know, again, because of the fact that you know, when you look to Yonkers, it's a good place to live. It's a good place to live. I think we have too many people living here. Maybe it's getting a little tight up here. Parking is at a premium. Parking's at a premium here in Yonkers, and that's part of, if you watch some of our our council meetings and committee meetings. You know that's the biggest issue that we're having. One of the biggest issues is, you know, illegal apartments and parking. Those are.
I gotta ask you then. Well, what I hear you saying is that there are two things that I take away, and I guess the most important is, since we are sending so much money to the state, as you suggested, over $50 million, and we don't really get every year, and we're not really getting any of that back.
We sent up, for instance, last year, we sent up $450 million. We got $400 back. They're still holding $50 million. That's what I'm saying. It's a net positive for the state. You know, so we do get money back for in AIM and foundation money for the schools, but we're still shortchanged our own money.
Well, that's a question then. I'm not challenging that at all. I mean, you know the numbers. I don't. So the question is, does that happen to every community where they send up more than they receive back? Or are other communities are in worse shape than we are, so they figure, well, you know, let's take 10% of what they send up here, and we'll divvy it up elsewhere in other communities. Is that the issue?
I can't speak for other municipalities. Okay, I know the Yonkers numbers. I know what we do. I know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, is it possible some of the other municipalities are in a negative position? Possibly, but again, that's, you know, you want us to give us make a contribution to our fair share of the state's finances. Okay, take 10%, give us back. All right, take 10%, take another 10, you know, take 5, give us back the other 40. You know, whichever way you want to slice it.
I hear you.
We're Yonkers, and I've been saying, you know, for saying this for years, and you know, we're a victim of our own success. We're a victim of our own success. You know, we're successful. We get labeled certain things, but yet, you know what? 80%+ of our kids are in the schools are below the poverty level. It's a tale of two cities here in Yonkers, and you know, they
hold,
tell us.
Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Yeah, hold on 1 second because there's a call coming in. So maybe that call is for you because I don't know if it's for me, but we'll find out in a moment. Bear with me. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Let's see. Okay. Good morning, caller. I think they're off now for some reason. Maybe they dropped the call, but no big deal.
They'll call back.
The question then, as a corollary to what you're advising me and informing me of, is then why is it so difficult for us to convince not only our delegation, you know, the people who represent us, the majority, the Senate leader, and we have another senator, Shelley Mayer, and then Andreas Stewart-Cousins, the Senate leader. We've got Gary Pretlow, who's the Assembly member, as well as Nader Sayers. Why is it so difficult then for our representatives to actually convince the state that we are in such need and that the formula doesn't work for us? So where is the disconnect? Because we've been doing this for over 20 years that I'm aware of.
I've been an advocate, as you know, for many years, and now on the council
for
two. If I had that magic switch and button to make whatever it is that happens within the state, I mean, there's no question. I've presented my numbers to all of them. Not really Gary, but to, you know, to the assemblymen and say it, you know, because I see them all the time, you know,
right.
The two senators who, again, you know, are very, you know, between Andrew Stewart-Cousins, who is the majority leader now, and Shelley Mayer, who is the budget, the education chair. Listen, I present the numbers. They know I'm right. They know what the numbers are. Why they're not delivering to us. I think they want to. I think there's powers that be up there. So I don't know all the formulas, you know, but they're doing that. I myself will probably try to get up to Albany myself. I didn't go up on the day where they were going up with the kids. I couldn't make it that day.
Right.
But I plan on going up there if I can to meet with the controller and the budget director up there in Albany and state my case to them personally, you know, whether it, you know, hope it doesn't go on deaf ears, but you know, I'm going to state my cases. I have my numbers in front of me. I want them to explain to me why. But
I got to ask you a question then. You know, based on what you're saying, I'll be honest with you. I'm almost shocked by what you're telling me, because the reason there's a disconnect in my mind, I believe everything that you're telling me, because it always made sense to me as well, except that I never could comprehend why Yonkers didn't get its fair share. I did know that we overspent. That was another big issue. But I guess where the disconnect is that we don't celebrate as a city, we don't celebrate all the accomplishments. They go unheard. We don't celebrate anything that's good. We don't know how to contend with contentious issues. We don't divulge it. It's never public. And you know what? Then nobody talks about it. So every time you turn around, everything is a celebration of what? When the reality is that it's all about money, because it affects people. And we're in such a state, as you mentioned, nobody seems to be concerned about the fact that most of our kids in the school, 80% of them, as you mentioned, I didn't know the exact figure, but let's say 80%, maybe even more, who are you know, their households don't earn that much money. So I don't understand why we go there, and why we don't have a different story to tell.
Well,
and then also, you know, maybe I'm not the number one choice for getting this sort of stuff out, but I know that if I would have this information at my hand and I could come up with numbers, I would be able to write it, and it would be very, very powerful. But then maybe people have a concern and they prefer to do it through the Journal News, but they're not reporting the lack of balance in our state budget, and that we're not getting it.
This is
the crux of it all.
I respectfully disagree with you, Hezzy, because the mayor is our biggest cheerleader. He's our biggest cheerleader, and you know we have a lot of great things happening. You know,
I don't disagree that he's a great cheerleader, but he's doing it in silence. It's all
every time he speaks, he talks about our accomplishments, low crime, the graduation rates are going up, people are coming in,
let me tell you something. I do know what's going on when it comes to crime. We don't report crime. Since we have a new commissioner, when he became an acting commissioner, he doesn't report crime at all. There is no crime report. When was the last time you heard about anything that happened in Yonkers? It's happening all the time, except we don't hear about it. It's never written. There's no press release about it. Nothing is going out. Nothing. Crime is going up. You may not know it, but it is.
Well,
it's going up 40%.
I go to the police meetings. I go to the first and fourth precinct meetings all the time. I communicate with the second precinct captain all the time. The good news on my side is no news is good news. Yes, there's issues. I do have some issues dealing within the community.
I'm not talking about issues.
But what do you want
us
to report?
Where are the numbers?
What's that? Well,
where are the numbers?
I don't know what you're looking for.
You're not old enough. I'm not saying I'm calling you like ignorant because of age. You're much younger than I am, maybe by 20 years or maybe even a little more. The point is I've been all over the world, and you know what's interesting? When you go to many places around the world, they tell you one thing, but they never substantiate it with numbers. That's been gone now since World War II. Nobody pulls that sort of stuff anymore.
We don't
get numbers. Where are the numbers?
I go to the precinct meetings. I get the result. Nothing's perfect, but thank God, in my eyes, nothing serious. I have not anything serious that happens. Thank God, it's few and far between, and that's the stuff that makes the news. Everything else is you're not going to get away from.
No.
You know, the small stuff that we deal with. You know, car thefts. You know, people leave their cars unlocked. Tell everybody lock their car door. The biggest thing we hear about is vandalism in cars. You know, people leave their cars unlocked, and it happens. Kids are walking around.
Then you're not hearing. It's not that you're not hearing. You're not deaf. It's just that they don't tell you. I'm sorry. I'm not going to argue with you because I'm not looking to argue.
All right, let's talk
I'm
about
just
some more good
stuff.
I'm
concerned that the numbers are not there.
Well, I think
a lot of the stuff is good, except we don't celebrate it, and it can't be done because it's spoken only to a few, a clique of people they think they should know.
I'm trying to pinpoint what you're trying to say that we don't celebrate.
Let me tell you, if you're looking. Well, we could celebrate a lot of things. Like we could celebrate, like for example, I just read that Lionsgate, which is situated in a federal opportunity district, and that's only been around now for about 2, possibly 3 years, not longer. So there are incentives. When Lionsgate came here, I remember calling up the IDA and saying. Because I knew the developer, I knew of the developer, I don't know him personally, but I knew some of his conduct over the years, and I wondered if at that time, unaware of the federal opportunity district, if the IDA was involved in helping them with some sort of, an incentive. which would have been fine. It didn't matter. But then I realized that they were going to go with a federal government because the federal incentive was greater than what we could do here as a local IDA, Industrial Development Agency. And now all of a sudden, I think it was yesterday or the day before in the Journal News, all of a sudden it's moved over to the IDA in Yonkers. What happened? Did we just throw away the federal funding that was supposed to go to Lionsgate?
Well, I don't
There's
know
no
the
discussion
details.
About
I,
it.
I don't
it's
know
a
those
vacuous
details.
Article. You know, let me tell you one thing. There's a way to write, and there's a way of sharing information. And I'm sorry, but the Journal News is vacuous in their description of it all. It's like they gloss over it as if it doesn't matter, because maybe they don't even understand that it was a federal opportunity district, and there's a difference. And it comes out of the pocket of the city, which we evidently can't always afford, which is what we're saying.
Well, again, but again, do you want me to give you my feedback on that? Okay.
Of course. Why do you think we're having a discussion?
So, again, you say again when people, I want people to understand that we are not technically losing anything, okay? At the end of the day, when the IDA does what they do, okay, we're not technically losing anything, because when they get pilots and they give sales tax abatements and transfer tax abatements, the bottom line is that the monies, okay, let's just take a real estate tax, a pilot. Okay. So if the land that Lionsgate is going to build on right now, okay, and again it's in a parking lot, or it's over there by downtown, and the point of the matter is that if whatever the dollars and cents that lot, which may be zero, okay, so if someone is paying us zero or X, okay, and the thing is you're going to give somebody a 5-year pilot or something in order to they give it on the new value. You know, they don't give it on the old value. It's never really, you know, like I have a project going on the west side that was paying zero. The property was paying zero real estate taxes. The city, when they bought the property, gave them a pilot, but the pilot was for 5 years, and all of a sudden these folks were paying, you know, they were paying half of what they're going to pay after 5 years. But the point of the matter here is it was zero. So now we're getting 50% of the number, you know, and I don't want to, you know, disclose the whole
beginning.
Thing, but we're getting monies that we didn't have before, and if we're giving a sales tax abatement for a project that's going to be built, and if the granted we won't get the sales tax, we weren't getting the sales tax if the people are buying, hopefully buying materials and spending money in the downtown, we're going to get our businesses are going to get money, and that was where we're going to generate the money. So I don't see. Just like when the state lost Amazon, when we lost the city, lost Amazon, I said we could have taken it over here someplace, because it's a win-win. It's a win-win, because it was, if you had zero, and yeah, you're going to give them 50% of a new number. Well, it's 50% of something we didn't have before. I hope I made myself clear.
I agree.
That's all I'm trying to say.
You
got to take these opportunities, and yeah, in the short term we might not make as much, but in the long term, you know, we'll do very well. We'll do very well in the long term.
But you know, look, I don't disagree with you at all on that. All I know is I remember when the first time the pilots went out. That goes back a long, long time ago. Remember when we built the a senior living center on Riverdale Avenue, right across the border from St. Vincent's. And I forgot the name of the hotelier that built it. It was for seniors, and they took care of, they lived there, and they had doctors there and all kinds of things. It's an unbelievable setup. They had a pilot as well. And their pilot was like for 10 years, and the Pritzker family is the people that own the hotel chain, the biggest and most lucrative chain in the world. And yet we were giving them an incentive. And you know what they were paying? They were paying out, they were giving out to the top 10 kids in this Yonkers schools. They would give them a donation or like a scholarship incentive. And it came out of their pocket. and it was presented by them directly to the students. And so in a sense, they were taking it off as a tax write-off, and we got no credit for it. But it didn't, that hardly paid. And since that time, since they were here, I think the property has moved over three or four times, sold from one group or another. The question is, though, what did we get from it?
What we got from it was, and how many years ago you're talking about? Okay.
This goes back about 15 years ago.
Okay. The biggest one, and then you know that I was an advocate for many years because I think we know each other about 20 years at least. And
yeah.
And we were advocating, you know, was when they were doing the Stu Leonard's project. That's what I brought up before, was because the thing that back then was,
right,
when John Spencer, mm-hmm, you know, he laid the groundwork for a lot of new development here because we had nothing going on in the city of Yonkers. And he,
right,
he, and yes, and we, and to attract others, he took, I don't remember exactly what was up the hill up there, but it was now look what it's generating in terms of sales tax. So again, John Spencer had the vision of taking this stool lunch. He's told me the story, John, many times. It's a great story about,
mm-hmm,
what him and Phil Amacone did, and then Phil carried it on after he left and he became mayor. And it was a matter,
yes,
of getting to the point. Now, there was a question. Now, a lot of people asked the question, well, now people should be paying us to come here because we are such a hot spot right now. But the point of the matter here is that I'd like to control more of what's happening with the IDA, but they're their own thing sometimes. But the point is, I think that everything that they've done, okay, the fruit is being bared now with the fact that our income tax, all the apartment buildings, and all the people that are living here, most of the people,
mm-hmm,
are contributing to the city in terms of paying their income tax surcharges and real estate taxes. So it all came together, and as I said, as I started off with, we don't have a revenue problem here in the city. We have a spending problem, and we're doing. But again, I think that the need to have done what they did back then was the instigator of where we are today.
I hear you. So it was the initiative, and it worked, and they built it. They also got an unbelievable deal, considering Stu Leonard's, Costco, Home Depot, and whatever else is there. The bottom line is, you know, the Morris brothers, who owned the property, I think they're still paying $360,000 a year for all those stores. Can you imagine? And when
I'll
is that going to
double check
change?
What that total number is, but again, I don't know the exact number, but mm-hmm, the point of the matter here is that it's doing well for all of us here in Yonkers in the terms of additional sales tax, employment, the people who are working, paying payroll taxes. So it all comes down
to
the bottom line. It comes in, it's coming in.
Right. You're saying it's coming in with good revenue, and sales tax is increasing, which is great. But there are no figures to break out any of this stuff, so there's no way to substantiate anything other than just to appreciate what people are saying and accept it for what they're saying it. But that doesn't mean it's validated. And that's all I'm saying is I don't see the validation of all these wonderful numbers that are being spoken of in a vacuous way. So
if you
show me 90%, then there you have it. It's 90%. If you tell me it's only 15%, then that's what it is, 15%. But it needs to be proven. This is big time, you know.
Let's sit down in my office someday, bud. Hezzy, come sit down with me
I'll
in my office. And
I'm looking for an education. I'm
looking
for it.
We'll pull out the budget
book.
I'll show you what I'm doing.
It.
And I guarantee you there'll be a lot of questions asked during this, you know, starting now. I'm going to be, you know, asking some questions of the commissioners before the budget starts, and I've got preliminary numbers, and, you know, all I can tell you is that we're moving forward to make Yonkers continue making Yonkers again a better place every day. That's all I can say is that I know that the mayor is, we have everybody on the council, we work together as a team, knowing that we're trying to make things better for tomorrow, while protecting and keeping the place a safe, clean place today. So we're keeping our finger on the pulse, and if you see anything, say something. That's what I tell everybody, because yes, if there's something happening, let us know, because unfortunately we can't be every place, and believe you me, we will react to make sure that we can make it. We don't want to make this city any less dirty, more dirty or unsafe. We're going to be on top of it. The moment we see a dumping, you call that dump number, that stuff gets picked up right away. We're very responsive right now. We're a very responsive city.
I know that was a very good program that was initiated, I guess, I think it was more like 5 years ago or something, and it's really worked very well. So that was good. It's worked out very, very nicely because there were a lot of places that were being used as dumping grounds.
So I hope all your listeners that are not Yonkers residents your listeners that are not Yonkers residents, I hope I've convinced them to come up here and come shopping. Okay, I'll come by
well,
your house.
I think that they have. I don't think it's really a problem. Cross County Shopping Center is doing well, and other places are doing well. There's a reason to come up here. Costco is doing well, and Sue Leonard's is their best store of all the stores that they have.
We're celebrating. You keep saying not celebrating. We are celebrating all this stuff. It is. Everyone's coming. Every time someone comes up here that hasn't been here before, we're celebrating. We're celebrating because I'm very happy with what's going on. I'd like to see things better, and I'm going to work my best to make sure that we keep taxes down this year, and hopefully zero.
Uh-huh.
I keep telling the mayor 0% tax increase. He looks at me in the eye sometimes. 0% mayor this year. No tax increases this year. That's my goal.
That's a good goal, and we'll see how all of that works. And I hope the numbers fit, so you don't have to raise the taxes. And hey, maybe we'll be able to get a bigger share of what we send up to the state. So maybe that'll work.
I'm looking forward
to
when.
Never can tell.
You see, the other thing that we look forward to is we have MGM here, and I think it's a matter of time before we have. I mean, Councilman Breen just put the resolution. Councilman Breen puts up an asking the other day on we're sending a resolution up to the state saying, hey, how about letting us at least having the sports betting at this point before because it's a little more difficult on the gaming side of it. If we can start getting a piece of that pie, and hopefully somehow, some way, we're able to get some additional host city money. We'll continue to do well. We just need to we need to manage some payrolls a little bit better. I think that's my biggest thing. That's my concern. And I'm going to be meeting with the superintendent of schools this weekend to see what his preliminary budget numbers are. And I have a concern of the future that I don't think we're prepared for the future retirement of a lot of teachers. And I'd like to see a program started here in Yonkers for, let's call it the Yonkers a Yonkers Academy for Teaching or something, because I think we have a lot of smart kids here that can become teachers, and we're not prepared for the what I've been told is going to be a retirement. A lot of teachers are going to be retiring
age. And
we need to replace
them,
and we can't keep replacing them with people in the higher the highest lanes and the steps. We need to bring people in, and we need more people at the lower tiers, and if we manage that in all departments, we will control things in the spending side, and as the older folks retire and we're down to when we have all of our workers in the tier 6 pension plan, it'll all come to roost. I don't know if I'm going to be alive to see the full fruition of it. I mean, it might take another I'd love to see it happen sooner than later, but I could probably see in 15, 20 years from now for sure, possibly 10, when everyone is in that sixth tier. We're going to be in great shape. I see a great future for people moving into Yonkers now, and I hope to be here for most of it.
Location, right? It really is.
The location I want people.
Terrific.
Keep them coming.
Yeah.
Keep them coming. Keeps the prices. Keeps the real estate prices up. That's what I like. That's what I got involved. I want property values to go up. That's my goal is safety, and property values. Keep the property values up here, and people will keep coming.
Well, one thing, maybe another time, because we don't have enough time for it today, but wondering maybe we could once delve into this whole issue of revaluation of property, and if that's a positive move or a negative move, I don't know.
It's something that it's happening. It's going to happen, and I'm trying
I think
to
it's going to happen.
Oh, I know it's going to happen. There's no question about it, especially now with a Democratic supermajority on the council and a Democratic mayor. I mean, the Republicans can't fight it off anymore. But it's something that has to happen. It's going to happen. But what I recommend to folks is, listen, you want to find out for sure? You know, a lot of people, what's going to come out, you know, what's going to come out, to, you know, what's going to come home to roost is any of the folks that have put in a bathroom they weren't supposed to have, legalized and stuff like that. I'm telling all I go to all my homeowners meetings. I'm telling them, if you have it, reval's coming. And when it comes, they're going to find out what you have that they don't have recorded. Get it legalized now.
Right.
Find out what it is, because it's, you know, in 2 or 3 years when the reval does happen, I'm telling everybody, do your certiorari now. Find out if your house is value, you know, your real estate taxes are good, you know, positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
Find out on your own now, because I'm giving you a heads up. It's happening, and don't come to me saying that, why'd you do this to me? I said, well, 'cause I'm letting everybody know, and I'm sending out the SOS now to check it out, because some people are going to benefit, some people are going to get hurt. Like they, you know, they send that, say, one third, one third, one third. You know, I'm not convinced about the one third, one third, one third. I'm not convinced.
It's BS. It's BS. It's not
Like I said, I didn't addition on my house. I got every CO that I had to get on my house. I want no skeletons in my closet. If I pay my taxes a little higher, so be it. My house is worth a lot. It's a bigger house than most houses. But you know, some people, they're trying to, you know, cut their nose despite their face, and it's going to come home to roost. But big thing is, we're going to hopefully weed out these illegal apartments. You know, these are things that are hurt.
That's another issue.
That is. We can talk about we can spend an hour on that one.
Absolutely.
I want to
thank you very, very much. I don't want to push you beyond the time limit, because the time is short. I hope you'll consider coming back again, because I think it's very compelling, the issues that you'll be having to contend with, and it's important for people to know.
Well,
so thank
I look
you
forward
again,
to
Mr. Moranti. Pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Heavy. Bye.
All the best. Well, here we have it, folks. Anthony Moranti. He's the Yonkers City Council member representing District 6, and he's also the budget chair. So big, 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 big responsibility, that's for sure. Well, let's go look and see something else, and see what else is going on in our neck of the woods. Let's find out a little bit about the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. Now, in case you do want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, they have now one number that you can reach them at, and that number is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. 4326 is their number for the office, their cell number, their text number, and their voicemail number. So one number for all, 347-415-4326. Let's go on and talk about some other issues that have come about. And so we're going to try to cover it. Well, we are, just so you know, Thursday and Friday, we're going to be covering the contest, the primary Super Tuesday contest that came about. So I'll be speaking with Gabrielle M. Etzel. She runs the Unvarnished blog, and just very, very big on politics, and so she's studying all these things. So we're going to find out a little bit more about the takeaway that we realized in this battlefield that took place on Tuesday. So in the meantime, I wanted to cover some other issues with you. And one of the biggest issues, unfortunately, is the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. You know what? Before we go there, let's just look at some other things which you might find interesting as well, and not so grave. And that is, a rare Isaac Newton manuscript was discovered in a Corsican, on the island of Corsica, a library. So a first edition copy of Isaac Newton's groundbreaking book laying out his three laws of motion, which became the foundation for modern physics, had been found at a library on the French island of Corsica. Vanina Shirinsky-Shikmatov, the director of conservation at the FESH, F-E-S-C-H, Public Heritage Library in Ajaccio, that's the capital of the island, said she discovered the copy of the 17th century work while studying an index from the library's founder, Lucien Bonaparte, one of Bonaparte's brothers. She says, I found the Holy Grail in the main room, hidden in the upper shelves, she told Agence France-Presse last week. The cover has a little damage, but inside it's in excellent condition. This is the cornerstone of modern mathematics, she said. The Latin text, Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica, or in English, Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, was the first published by Newton in 1687. Is this like unbelievable? Well, the renowned physicist was famously inspired by seeing an apple fall from a tree in his garden in Grantham, England, which sparked his elaborations of the classical laws of gravity, motion, and optics. Now, English translations were published later, but the original editions remain prized by collectors. A Latin edition sold for $3.7 million at an auction held by Christie's a few years ago, and that's the one at the Ajaccio Library. And Shirinsky Shikhmatov said, referring to a December 2016 sale in New York to an undisclosed buyer, it is not the first rare find at the FESH Library since an in-depth review of the holdings began a few years ago. In 2018, Shirinsky Shikhmatov unveiled a Thesaurum Hieroglyphicorum, which is a thesaurus of the hieroglyphs, a study of Egyptian hieroglyphs dating from 1610, some 200 years before Francis Jean-François Champollion deciphered part of the Rosetta Stone. Is this like mind-boggling? What a celebration of the brilliance of people. It is just absolutely mind-boggling. So I was just set aside by it. Now, let's talk about what's going on with respect to the virus, the coronavirus. Well, evidently, global growth is going to dip below last year's rate. That's what the International Monetary Fund chief had said. The new coronavirus epidemic poses a serious threat, quote unquote, and will slow growth in the world economy to below the 2.9% posted last year, the IMF chief Kristalina Georgieva had said on Wednesday. Well, the COVID-19 outbreak, quote, is no longer a regional issue. It is a global problem that calls for global response, Georgieva had told reporters. Now, the epidemic's impact on confidence and steps to contain it are impacting economic activity, with the result that global growth in 2020 will dip below last year's level, she said. Now, the IMF in January forecast growth this year of 3.3%, which means at least a half a point will be lost to the virus. But, quote, how far will it will fall and how long the impact will be is still difficult to predict, she said. Georgieva said the fund's analysis had assumed the virus would be largely confined to China, which would have led to a sharp but short economic slowdown followed by a quick recovery. Unfortunately, over past week, we've seen a shift to a more diverse scenario for the global economy due to the, quote, sheer geographic spread of the epidemic around the world, impacting a third of the International Monetary Fund's 189 member countries. The virus has infected over 93,000 people worldwide and killed more than 3,200 people, mainly in China. Georgieva and World Bank President David Malpass spoke to reporters after a conference call of finance officials from the member nations who directed the International Monetary Fund, quote, to use all its available financing instruments to help member countries in need, end quote. And then continuing, quote, we are determined to provide the necessary support to mitigate the impact, especially on the most vulnerable people and countries, the statement said, from the governing body, the IMFC. So Georgieva said that the Washington-based development lender has $1 trillion in overall financing capacity, including $50 billion available without a formal IMF program and $10 billion in no-interest funds for the poorest countries. The World Bank on Tuesday announced it had $12 billion available to help countries respond to the coronavirus threat. Malpass told reporters, quote, the speed and breadth of the response is crucial to its effectiveness. Then I don't know if you heard this, breaking news. About an hour ago, Bloomberg dropped out of the Democratic presidential primary race and has endorsed Biden for the presidency. So now let's just look and see what else is happening around the world. So bear with me a moment. And again, this is coronavirus related. The Saudi government has suspended Umrah, the pilgrimage over the coronavirus, or the fears of the coronavirus. Excuse me. Saudi Arabia today suspended the year-round Umrah, or pilgrimage, over fears of a new coronavirus spreading to Islam's holiest cities, an unprecedented move that raises fresh uncertainty over the annual Hajj. Now, the kingdom said the suspension was provisional, but with the Umrah attracting millions of people annually, the decision has a huge potential impact. The Gulf state has decided to, quote, suspend Umrah temporarily for citizens and residents in the kingdom, the Interior Ministry said in a statement carried by the official Saudi press agency. They were also barred from, quote, visit to the Prophet's mosque in Medina, according to a foreign ministry tweet. The move comes after authorities, alarmed over the spread of the coronavirus across the Middle East, last week suspended visas for the Umrah and barred citizens from the Six Nation Gulf Cooperation Council from entering Mecca and Medina. Now, Saudi Arabia on Monday confirmed its first case of new coronavirus after one of its citizens who had returned from COVID-19 hotspot Iran tested positive. The Umrah, which refers to the Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca, from Medina to Mecca, that can be undertaken at any time of year, attracts millions of Muslims from around across the globe each year. Now, the decision to suspend the Umrah comes ahead of the holy fasting month of Ramadan starting in late April, which is considered a favorable period for pilgrims to perform it. Now, there is a logistical challenge. The holy site, which draw millions of pilgrims each year, are a key revenue earner for Saudi Arabia. Now, around two-thirds of the 18.3 million Umrah participants in 2018 were citizens and residents of the kingdom, according to government statistics. It is unclear, however, how the coronavirus will affect the Hajj due to start in late July. Now, some 2.5 million faithful traveled to Saudi Arabia from across the world in 2019 to take part in the Hajj, which is one of the five pillars of Islam. The event is a massive logistical challenge for Saudi authorities, with colossal crowds cramming into relatively small holy sites, making it vulnerable to contagion. Saudi Arabia's custodianship of Mecca and Medina, Islam's two holiest sites, is seen as the kingdom's most powerful source of political legitimacy. But a series of deadly disasters over the years has prompted criticism of the Sunni kingdom's management of the Hajj. In September of 2015, a stampede killed up to 2,300 worshippers in the worst disaster ever to strike the pilgrimage. De facto ruler Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's Vision 2030 reform plan seeks to decouple the kingdom's economy, the world's top crude exporter, from oil dependency towards other sources of revenue, including religious tourism. The government had hoped to welcome 30 million pilgrims to the kingdom annually by 2030, so 10 years from now. So that's where it's going to end up eventually leading. One second here. I wanted to just check some other things with you. All right, now let's look at some other things. Oh yeah, I was looking for. This is also related. The Louvre, the museum in Paris, has reopened in Paris as staff agreed to end the coronavirus protest. The Louvre Museum in Paris reopened to the public today after management took steps to allay staff fears over the coronavirus spread, which had sparked a two-day stoppage. In a statement, the world's most visited museum said that, faced with the legitimate concerns of staff over COVID-19, it had agreed to take extra measures to ensure the safety of employees and visitors alike. The museum did not specify what measures were adopted, but a union representative said that staff had been given hand sanitizers and would not be required to handle cash at the till. Now, staff had refused to work on Sunday and Monday, citing a threat to health. The museum is closed to the public on Tuesdays. Well, the health ministry had argued there was no evidence of the grave and imminent threat to life or health that French employees could cite as a valid reason to refuse to work. Visitors applauded as the doors opened on Wednesday, an Agence France press reporter at the former Royal Palace reported. The closure of the Louvre, which received 9.6 million visitors last year, had caused bitter disappointment among the thousands of visitors who flock each day to the home of the Mona Lisa. The protests reflect growing jitters over the spread of the coronavirus, which has killed over 3,200 people worldwide, including four in France. The government at the weekend canceled all indoor events for more than 5,000 people as a precautionary measure. The decision led to the cancellation of the French capital's annual book fair, Livre Paris, which was expected to bring some 160,000 visitors to Paris this month. The Paris Half Marathon was also canceled on Sunday, though several hundred determined athletes defied the ban. So, a lot of stuff is happening on the world scale, as you could see and as you could hear. So it's going to be very, very compelling to see where things go. Now, let me just quickly look. The results, you know, when just to give you a sense of what's happening. Let me just save this all for tomorrow because it's too complex to be able to just give you like a one-shot deal on what's happening. And we'll just have to see where all that goes. Now, this is interesting. This is interesting because of what's happening here in France. Evidently, it's going to regulate the price of hand sanitizers amid the coronavirus outbreak. A very interesting perspective. France will put a cap on bacterial gel prices after pharmacists and consumers reported a steep increase since the start of the coronavirus outbreak. That's what Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire said on Wednesday. A decree regulating the price would be published during the day. Le Maire told French BFM Business Radio. A pharmacists union on Wednesday said France Info Radio that the price rise was unacceptable and called for government intervention. On Tuesday, President Emmanuel Macron said the government would take control of current and future stocks of face masks to ensure they would go to health workers and coronavirus patients. In this period we're going through, We have entered a phase that will last weeks and undoubtedly months. It is indispensable to have clarity, resilience, sang-froid, and determination to stop the epidemic, Macron said during a visit to the government's virus crisis center. Le Maire has urged the French public to refrain from panic buying and fears over the virus's spread, warning that binge shopping for household essentials could trigger shortages. Now, Europe is, France is Europe's second most affected country, with health officials reporting a total of more than 200 cases and 4 deaths. So just very, very frightening sort of situation that is going on. Now, one second here. Now, this is some possibly good news, but I really question the integrity of the Chinese figures. The coronavirus crisis ebbs in China as fear spread across the worst, the West. Well, the coronavirus epidemic shifted increasingly westward toward the Middle East, Europe, and the United States on Tuesday, with governments taking emergency steps to ease shortages of masks and other supplies for frontline doctors and nurses. Quote, we are concerned that countries' abilities to respond are being compromised by the severe and increasing disruption on the global supply of personal protective equipment caused by rising demand, hoarding, and misuse, said World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. We can't stop COVID-19 without protecting our health workers, he said. Deaths in Italy surged to 79 during making it the deadliest reported outbreak outside China. 23 members of Iran's parliament and the head of the country's emergency services were reported infected. South Korea expanded drive-through testing and confirmed hundreds of new cases. And in Spain's Basque region, at least 5 doctors and nurses were infected and nearly 100 healthcare workers were being held in isolation. The mushrooming outbreaks contrasted with optimism in China, where thousands of recovered patients were going home and the number of new infections has been dropping. Now, just so you know, it was reported but didn't really make much news, even though one could overcome the first crisis of an episode of having the coronavirus, COVID-19, and recovering from it. Some people who have recovered got it again. So that's not something that we hear too much about. Worldwide, more than 93,000 people have been infected and over 3,100 people have died, the vast majority of them in China. The number of countries hit by the virus exceeded 70, with Ukraine and Morocco reporting their first cases. The United States led schools and subways to sanitize and spread fears among nursing home residents who are especially vulnerable. The number of the infections in the U.S. topped 100 and the death toll climbed to 9. All of the deaths were in Washington state and most of them were residents of a Seattle area nursing home. Now, the U.S. Federal Reserve announced the biggest interest rate cut in over a decade to try to counter the expected damage to the economy. And stocks rose briefly on Wall Street in reaction before slumping again. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said that the virus, quote, will surely weigh on economic activity both here and abroad for some time. Now, other group of 7 countries appeared reluctant to follow suit with their own cuts, probably because many of their interest rates are already near or below zero. Well, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave healthcare workers the okay to use an industrial type of respirator mask often used to protect construction workers from dust and debris. Now, Iran's supreme leader ordered the military to assist health officials in fighting the virus, which authorities said has killed 77 people. Among the dead are a confidant of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, Iran's former ambassador to the Vatican, and a recently elected member of parliament. Iran's judiciary chief, Ebrahim Raisi, said some people are stockpiling medical supplies for profit and urged prosecutors to show no mercy. Quote, hoarding sanitizing items is playing with people's lives, and it is not ignorable, he said. Now, ignorable, I guess, is the way to really pronounce the word. France is, I've never seen the word ignorable, but ignorable. So I guess that's the way it is. Anyway, France's president announced the government would take control of current and future stocks of face masks to ensure they could go to health workers and coronavirus patients. And the finance minister warned that binge shopping for household essentials could trigger shortages. The country reported a total of more 200 cases and 4 deaths. In this period we're going through, we have entered a phase that will last weeks and undoubtedly months. It is indispensable to have clarity, resilience, sang-froid, and determination to stop the epidemic, French President Emmanuel Macron had said during a visit to the government's virus center or crisis center. South Korea confirmed another 142 cases on Wednesday morning, raising its total to 5,328, the second highest in the world. At drive-through virus testing centers, workers dressed head-to-toe in white protective suits leaned into cars and with mouth swabs to check for the virus. And troops sprayed disinfectant on streets and alleys across the city. In China's count of new viruses dropped again on Wednesday, with just 119 reported, it is still by far the hardest hit country, with over 80,000 infections and about 95% of the world's deaths. We scrutinized this data and we believe this decline is real, said World Health Organization outbreak expert Maria von Tehova, who traveled to China as part of a team from the United Nations agency. She said the extraordinary measures taken there, including the lockdown of more than 60 million people, had a significant effect on the direction of the outbreak. We believe that a reduction of cases in other countries, including Italy, Korea, Iran, everywhere, that this is possible. China's ambassador to the United Nations said the country is winning its battle against COVID-19. We are not far from the coming of the victory, Zhang Jun had said. In Japan, questions continue to build about the fate of the Olympics. The country's Olympic minister, Seiko Hashimoto, said that Japan is making the utmost effort to proceed with the games opening on July 24 in Tokyo. But she told Parliament that the country's contract with the International Olympic Committee specifies only that the games be held in 2020, meaning they could be postponed to later. So, whoa, heavy-duty stuff, don't you think? Then there are other issues, of course. With respect to the European Union, the European Union is pledging 700 million euros to aid the Greek response to the migrant influx from Turkey. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the European Union would provide Greece with, quote, all the support needed, end quote, as it struggles with an influx of migrants allowed to cross from neighboring Turkey after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned that, quote, millions of migrants would soon head for Europe. European Union chiefs on Tuesday pledged millions of euros of financial assistance to Greece to help tackle the migration surge from neighboring Turkey, warning against those wishing to test Europe's unity. Flying by helicopter over the Greek-Turkish border, where thousands of desperate asylum seekers have tried to break through for days, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that the bloc would provide Greece, quote, those who seek to test Europe's unity will be disappointed, von der Leyen had said, standing alongside Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis and the chiefs of the European Council and European Parliament, quote, we will hold the line and our unity will prevail. European Commission President said the bloc would provide 700 million euros, at $777 million, half of it immediately to help manage the migrant situation. In addition, the European Union border agency Frontex, F-R-O-N-T-E-X, will deploy a rapid intervention team, including an additional 100 guards backed by coastal patrol vessels, helicopters, and vehicles, she said. Our first priority is making sure that order is maintained at the Greek external border, which is also the European border, von der Leyen told journalists. I am fully committed to mobilizing all the necessary operational support to the Greek authorities, she said, adding that Greece was acting as a shield, quote unquote, for Europe. Over 500 Frontex guards were currently deployed, and Greece could also receive assistance in medical teams, mobile shelters, tents, and blankets, she said. von der Leyen insisted that Turkey is not an enemy, but added people are not just means to reach a goal. Earlier, Mitsotakis announced that Greek border forces had averted over 24,000 attempts at illegal entry by land and sea, making dozens of arrests. And Europe has not been up to the task of dealing with the migration crisis, he said. I hope this crisis will serve as a wake-up call for everyone to assume their responsibilities. The United Nations Refugee Agency has roughly estimated that there are now some 20,000 migrants massed across the 200-kilometer, that's 125-mile border with Turkey. This is a very rough assessment because the movement is continuous towards different sides, said Stella Nanu, the United Nations Health and Children Resources representative to Greece. Amid claims on the Turkish side of the Greek security forces are shooting near migrants, European Council President Charles Michel said it was, quote, crucial to act in a proportionate manner and to show respect for human dignity and international law. And Greece has vehemently denied the allegations. Quote, no shots have been fired by Greek border forces against any individuals attempting to enter Greece illegally, said government spokesman Stelios Pitsas. Now, several aid groups at the Aegean islands of Lesbos said Tuesday they were suspending work with refugees and evacuating personnel after attacks on staff. Once night falls, there are nonstop attacks on non-governmental organizations and workers, on people who are here as volunteers, said Douglas Herman, co-founder of the organization Refocus. Most of those organizations right now have started to suspend their operations, some indefinitely, he told Agence France-Presse. At the Greek border crossing of Kastanis, Agence France-Presse reporters saw soldiers boarding migrants onto military vehicles, and other unmarked vans were also picking up migrants wandering on the streets. Now, thousands have arrived at the frontier since President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced last week that it would no longer stop them trying to enter Europe. Athens has suspended asylum applications, and Mitsotakis on Tuesday said it was painfully clear that Turkey has systematically encouraged and assisted tens of thousands of refugees and migrants to illegally enter Greece. This is no longer a refugee problem. It is a blatant attempt by Turkey to use desperate people to promote its geographical agenda, the Greek prime minister said. European leaders have insisted Turkey abide by a 2016 deal to stop migrant departures in exchange for 6 billion euros in assistance. Some Syrians have accused Turkish troops of pushing them across the frontier. Von der Leyen said she had compassion for the migrants that had been lured through false promises into this desperate situation, end quote. Turkey already hosts some 4 million refugees and faces another huge influx from Syria, where the regime, backed by Russian air power, is pressing a violent offensive to retake the last rebel-held province of Idlib. Unbelievable. So there are many, many, many issues. And it's, you know, this is also very interesting because it seems that a lot of, like, French greetings, for example, and this is going to happen all over the world, a lot of behavior patterns are going to stop. Kissing goodbye to la bise, the coronavirus threatens traditional French greetings. It seems it is used to greet friends, family, and colleagues across France, but the traditional bis, a kiss on each cheek, may now be a health hazard, with government officials advising against it amid the coronavirus epidemic. I formally advised against the practice of handshaking, the reduction of social contact in a physical manner, and that would include the practice of la bise, French Health Minister Olivier Véran told the French press conference on Saturday. In America, we used to handshake, if you remember, and the bottom line is that we give each other a bump instead of, you know, so you dump a bump of the knuckles, which is a, you know, I never got used to it, but some people are into that very, very heavily. So the reaction to the advice has been mixed. While some have embraced it, others have found the habit of a lifetime difficult to give up. This morning when I went to kiss a colleague, he said, no, we can't shake hands anymore. I didn't shake his hand, but I kissed him anyway, said Parisian office worker Gaël Fessler. Well, France has so far seen a total of 204 confirmed coronavirus cases with 4 deaths. So, very compelling. So we'll see how behavior patterns are going to change because of this. Now, let's look at some other things that are going on around the world. Bear with me a moment. Let me just touch on this. Evidently, the question is whether the fact that Netanyahu won a majority of the vote, but he hasn't been able to snap the lead or get into the position of taking the helm. He is short a couple of votes. So that's going to be a big question, how that gets resolved. And where is it? So even though he claimed victory in the election, he still lacks a governing majority, and that is very, very important. Now let me just see one other thing. Okay, want to go over and look at some other issues around the world. Bear with me a second. Want to see what's happening in South America, because that's critical. One second. Where is it here? I think we covered that. We spoke to you yesterday about Haiti. And one second here. Maybe I misplaced some of my articles. One second. This is really quite interesting. I didn't expect this to come about today, but Canada is urging Iran to give access to the downed airliner's black boxes. Evidently, they still haven't done it. Iran must give access to the black boxes from a Ukrainian airliner shot down by an Iranian missile in early January, Canada's foreign minister said today. We do expect and we demand from Iran to give access to the black boxes without any further delay, François-Philippe Champagne said during a press conference with his Ukrainian counterpart in Kiev. Champagne stressed that it has been more than 30 days since the accident killing all 176 people on board and that Iran will, quote, undermine the international law if it chooses to keep the recorders. Quote, we have questions and we expect Iran to provide answers, the minister said. Quote, we hope that Iran will choose the way of transparency. The Kiev-bound Air Ukraine International Airlines Boeing 737 crashed shortly after taking off from Tehran on January 8. Tehran admitted several days later it had accidentally shot down the airliner. During a confrontation with the United States, Iran had launched missiles at U.S. forces in Iraq in response to the killing of the top general of theirs, Qasem Soleimani, on January 3rd. So the victims were mostly Iranian and Canadian citizens as well as Ukrainian crew. Ukraine and Canada have repeatedly pressed Tehran to hand over the black box flight recorders to Kiev or Paris, but they remain in Iran. It's amazing, you know, there is just a lack of respect and transparency, that is for sure. So what can I tell you? All right, let's just look to see what else is happening. Maybe we should move over to what we prepared here for Asia and see where we go from here. Now, this is really very important because it really does lend itself to understanding that the world is in uncharted territory as the coronavirus toll continues to rise. Now, the world has entered uncharted territory in its battle against the deadly coronavirus. The United Nations Health Agency warned as new infections dropped dramatically in China on Tuesday but surged abroad, with the United States death toll rising to 6. Globally, the virus has killed more than 3,100 people and infected over 90,000, even as a clear shift in the crisis emerges, with 9 times as many cases recorded outside China as inside, according to the World Health Organization. China has imposed draconian quarantines and travel restrictions to keep large swaths of the population indoors for weeks, a strategy that appears to have paid off as new cases have been falling this month. While Italy has locked down towns, other countries have stopped short of enacting mass quarantines and instead have discouraged large gatherings, delayed sporting events, and banned arrivals from virus-hit nations. South Korea, Iran, and Italy have emerged as major spawning grounds for the novel coronavirus, which is believed to have originated at a market that sold wild animals in the central Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. We are in uncharted territory, the World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said on Monday. We have never been seen a respiratory pathogen that is capable of community transmission, but which can also be contained with the right measures. Very, very compelling stuff that's going on. And unfortunately, the coronavirus epidemic has surged in South Korea as cases exceed 3,000. 813 more coronavirus cases took place on Saturday, the biggest increase to date in the country. So wherever you look, numbers are growing exponentially. And I guess people and nations don't really know yet what to do. It is a major, major crisis, and it's going to affect everything probably for years to come. So it's becoming really a bad, bad situation. Now, let me just look at this. Well, a coronavirus in Israel. Evidently, a quarantine has been ordered for arrivals from Germany, France, Spain, Switzerland, and Austria. Israel has 15 confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus and dozens in quarantine. Thousands of high school students quarantined after classmates test positive, and authorities banned the gathering of more than 5,000 people. An Israeli teenager who tested positive for the novel coronavirus on Wednesday attended a soccer game in Tel Aviv on Monday, sending dozens of soccer fans into quarantine as the number of cases continues to rise. After initially instructing thousands of people to enter home quarantine, the health ministry later reversed that order, saying only some 70 people needed to be in home isolation. Now, 15 Israelis have tested positive for the novel coronavirus known as the COVID-19, and thousands have been placed in isolation. Out of the 15 cases, 8 seem to have contracted the illness in Italy, 4 in Israel from people who tested positive to COVID-19, and the other 3 were guests on the Diamond Princess cruise ship, which was anchored in a Japanese port. At a press conference, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that travelers who visited Germany, France, Spain, Austria, or Switzerland over the past 2 weeks must quarantine themselves at home, while Health Minister Yaakov Litzman said gathering of over 5,000 were forbidden. Well, 2 more Israelis tested positive for coronavirus, bringing the total to 12. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Tunisia confirmed the first cases of coronavirus. El Al cuts several European flights amid coronavirus fears. And later on, we found out that Israel orders the quarantine for travelers. The chief rabbi said to people, don't touch or kiss mezuzahs. I'll tell you about that in a moment. David Lau, Israel's chief rabbi, has issued a statement advising Jews that in light of the virus, they should not kiss or touch mezuzahs. Those are the scrolls inscribed with biblical verses contained in a case placed on a doorpost that observant Jews traditionally touch or kiss when they enter a building or room. So then it turns out that, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Health Minister Yaakov Litzman are set to give a statement to the media at the beginning of a press conference on the virus at 4 p.m. So 4 p.m. local time, that's 4 hours to 12. Subtract at 9 o'clock this morning, there was a press conference. We haven't gotten the word on what that press conference was or what they said, but, you know, it just can't keep up with that. The shares on the stock market in Tel Aviv fell amid the coronavirus fears. And then it seems also the Magen David, or like the ambulance service, Magen David Adom, the Red Cross, it's the Jewish version of the Red Cross, 101 hotline experiences and a high call volume. So the Magen David Adom hotline experienced a high volume of calls amid rising fears of coronavirus in Israel, following quarantine orders for thousands of soccer fans in Tel Aviv. And a spokesman for the Magen David Adom, Zaki Heller, stressed that 101 should only be called in case of symptoms or fever, cough, or difficulty in breathing. That's like a 911 call. Anyway, so that is the story there. And I think, let me see, I think we've covered everything. This is interesting as well. Didn't know about this. The coronavirus, you may need to take a two-week break from your life, the CDC has advised. As ramped up testing for COVID-19 by individual United States states exposes hidden cases, disease transmission deaths, officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are urging people to do their part to stop the spread of the new virus, including taking an extended hiatus from their daily lives. You may need to take a break from your normal daily routine for 2 weeks. Dr. Nancy Messonnier, director of the CDC National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Disease, said in a briefing on Tuesday, at the time of the publishing of this story, there were at least 118 COVID-19 cases and 9 deaths reported across at least 12 states in the United States. And of those cases, 48 are in repatriated citizens, and the rest are a mix of travel-related cases, cases linked to travel cases, and community spread cases. All of the deaths have occurred in Washington state, and the first U.S. case was detected. Many of the cases in the state have since been linked to an outbreak in a King County skilled nursing home called Life Care. Worldwide, COVID-19 epidemic has reached around 92,000 cases, 3,100 deaths, and I guess that's where we are. So probably be immersed in how to deal with this issue. And the only place where I've heard something that's really quite interesting is that it's conceivable that within a couple of weeks, literally within 2 weeks, tops maybe 3 weeks, Israel believes that they will have cracked the code and they will be able to start testing the efficacy of their antidote for the coronavirus, which would definitely be huge, to say the least. So it's going to be very, very compelling. Well, there we are, actually. So what I want to do is, get back to our studio screen and tell you what we're expecting for tomorrow. And let me just see. Yes, tomorrow we have a full day. We're going to be speaking to Lori and John Wiles, the citizen, So Lori and John Wiles, the Driving Me Crazy duo. We're going to be, I don't remember what they're reviewing, but I have to post it. I don't remember which car they were doing. And then Gabrielle M. Etzel from the Unvarnished blog. She's going to join us to begin the first half hour on Thursday with a balanced half hour on Friday, each time on at 10:30. And we're going to speak to her about the Super Tuesday results. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to speak to Westchester County District Attorney Anthony Scarpino. And at the last half hour, we'll try to catch up with some other international news and as well as domestic news. And so we'll see where we go. And I guess that's about it. Now, let me quickly look to see what else we have. Bear with me here. Where is it? Here we are. I want you to look to see if I missed something with respect to sharing with you some of the news that we've already written. One second. All right. No, I think that we've caught up. So if you have interest, of course, in reading anything else that we've done, you could certainly look us up at the YonkersTribune.com website and go from there. So let me go back to our studio screen and just wish you a good day. And where are we? Here we are. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye.